Mug Meeting Summaries podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our September meeting's main topic featured Adam Thompson talking about revision control systems for use by system administrators.
Revision control is normally a topic of interest to software developers, but it's also very useful to system administrators. Now, I'm not going to go deep into how to do all kinds of revision control. I'm just going to keep it at a level that sysadmins would find useful. Okay, we're getting cut off at the right-hand side, which is unfortunate, but oh well. We'll deal with it. Revision control software was designed for developers. Started out with just version control, which is mainly what we're going to talk about. But then it moved into software configuration management, which embraces entire projects, versioning of the entire project, not just of a single file, which then led to build management, which is, I don't really even understand build management. It adds like layers and layers of complexity onto the whole concept. Sysadmins can also use these. We can use version control almost anywhere. Anytime you have a file that you change, anytime you have a file you change by hand, generally speaking, you could put this under version control and potentially save yourself hassle down the road. Software config management can be used for more complicated situations. A lot of automated deployment systems, for example, use a lot of the same concepts. In fact, they use a lot of the same software under the hood. And build management I've actually seen used for large-scale deployments, like the type of scenario where you've got, you know, 1,000 machines all being deployed with customized images that are being built on the fly. Some of those systems use the same software management tools as software development, build management software. So what is version control? It's designed to keep track of the changes to a file. In a nutshell, that's it. So if you have a config file that you're changing on a regular basis, or even on a not-so-regular basis, and you ever want to be able to go back and say, well, what did I change back in February? That's what version control is about. Most version control systems allow multiple people to simultaneously work on multiple versions of a file. That's not normally going to be relevant to a system administrator, which is good news, because you can just ignore that entire section of the man page now. The big deal is, like I said, for sysadmins, you can now track changes to config files. You can also use revision control tools to backup files and to synchronize files between multiple systems. I'm not going to get into those use cases. They're amply documented online. And, well, if you want to know more, just post on Roundtable and somebody will explain it. So just an overview so you know what is out there. Software config management is more complex than just plain revision control. It manages entire file sets together, so it has a concept of a project, not just a file. Usually includes path information, usually includes all kinds of metadata about the project, build environment information. This is key. When we get into the SCM world, that's when we make that mandatory leap to client-server. There are some software config management products that aren't client-server, but they're few and far between. Build management takes it to the next step. Usually include things like deploying the product automatically. So if you have a Java application, a Java Enterprise application, not only will it check out all the source code, compile all the source code, it'll actually push it straight into your production environment for you and do other bizarre black magic stuff. Application lifecycle management appears to be the latest buzzword. Frankly, I don't really know what they're talking about. There's a reason I'm not a programmer anymore. The key thing is they're team-oriented, which means that they'll include workflow to approve changes. So by the time you get to the point of you're deploying the product, it's gone through a whole workflow where your manager signed off on it, the QA people signed off on it, the user testing people signed off on it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a complex scenario. Huh. And I think I kind of summed it up there. It's usually complex. And the very latest buzzword is continuous integration. Basically, all that really means is every time somebody makes a change, the whole project gets recompiled so that you can test it instantly. From now on, what I'm going to talk about is just revision control software. Not software config management, not build management, just plain revision control software. Why? Everyone can find a use for revision control. And, as I say, it's substantially easier to set up. Where would you use it? Anywhere you have ASCII config files. Yeah, you can use it for Unicode files. Usually there's no hassle. You can use it for national language character set files. Usually it's not a problem. You can even use it for binary files. It's not exactly what the systems are optimized for, but they will generally handle a binary file, just not very efficiently or very well. In other words, pretty much anything you would ever find in /etc is 90% chance it's a good candidate for revision control. I know people who use it for their .login, .bashrc, etc. files. Why not? It's something that you change on a periodic basis, and sometimes you have to go back and look at what you changed. Sometimes you have to roll back a change. I know someone who actually uses it to keep all their music synced between multiple systems. And that gets into the whole using it for backup, using it for synchronization. They're using not just the basic bare-bones revision control. They're using one of the client-server versions of it, where they basically checked in all their music files to a central repository, and then on every device where they want to listen to music, they check out a local, what's called a working copy, of the files that are being managed. It's not what the system was designed for, but it works. It's that flexible. When would you use revision control? There's a couple of different approaches. The top two are the classic approaches to revision control. You use it, or you invoke it, more to the point, before and after each edit, or after you finished every round of testing. Those are the two classic approaches. Some of the other approaches are you do it automatically from cron, so you get a nightly snapshot, or automatically from a startup script, which is a way that some people try to provide a slightly more useful concept than the Windows idea of last known good configuration. Usually they actually do it from not the startup script, but the shutdown script, so that when you shut down a service, you take a snapshot of the config that was working at that moment. That works too. These tools, the basic bare-bones revision control tools, and I'll get into that aspect of it in a few minutes, are simple enough and flexible enough. I mean, it'd be like trying to pigeonhole cat or LS. These tools are flexible. They can do almost anything you can imagine. But they have cases where it makes sense. Why would you use this? What changed yesterday? Well, okay, so at 3 o'clock in the morning, you made a change to a config file because something was broken. At 8 o'clock in the morning, your boss is screaming at you because you broke something even worse. And you're so exhausted, you have no idea what you did at 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, shoot, now what do? How do I back out to what was working last night so that I can take another stab at fixing the problem? If you were using version control, that'd be trivial. You just undo the last revision that you made to the file. You may need to know what changed back in February. Your security team comes to you and says, we've noticed a substantial uptick in spam getting through our firewalls since February. What did you change? Well, now it's September. I have no idea what I changed in February. If you were using version control, you'd be able to go back and tell them exactly what you changed in February. Who changed it? This one's a little trickier to set up, and may or may not apply to every environment, but wherever you've got more than one sysadmin, this can sometimes be very useful. Something changed last week. Well, I didn't change it. Well, I didn't change it. Well, I didn't change it. Well, one of you changed it. If you're using the system properly, you can probably tell which one of you really did change it. And, you know, basically, it helps finger point. easy rollback of changes. Well, we don't care who changed it, we just want it to work now. Okay, so we'll roll back to a known good point in time, and we'll just back out the changes we made. And this one is a little bit underappreciated. If you're starting from a known point, and you want to make a whole series of changes, but you're not sure how they're going to interact, if you're using a version control system of any type, this will make your life easier because you can selectively test individual sets of changes and then merge them all together and do it one step at a time so that at every step you have a working system. Well, minus the 5 minutes it took to find out that that one didn't work. It makes for a more controlled process. Talk about the history of it a little bit. Yeah, it's kind of dense with text. Started off with the source code control system shipped by AT&T and their programmer's workbench. 1972. These are not brand new concepts. And yet, having been around that long, they're still underused and underappreciated. You can still sometimes find SCCS on System 5 drive systems. So if you're running Solaris, HP UX, or EIX, you might actually have the old SCCS commands. Stay away from them. Do not touch them. There's a reason it hasn't been updated since, I think, 1980-something. It's Unix. It's still there. It still works. It still does exactly what it was designed to do in 1972. But we've come up with some better ideas since then.
I know people who still use the what command from SCCS.
Yeah, okay. Point taken. RCS dates from almost that far back. This one's 1982. So this still has a long and glorious history. This was developed for BSD Unix because AT&T did not license SCCS to Berkeley when they gave them the Unix source code. RCS is part of the base OS for every BSD, unsurprisingly. And as far as I can tell, it is available for every single flavor of Unix in existence. Now, SCCS, their file format lived on for many, many years, even though the command set was garbage. RCS is kind of the opposite. The file format is long gone, but the command invocation syntax and the way you interact with the system is still the basis of how almost every version control system today works. So if you know RCS, yeah, except Git. Git is the anomaly. So if you know RCS, you already know the basics of CVS, SVN, Mercurial, BitKeeper, etc., 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 etc. Directly following on to RCS, we had CVS, still very popular, the concurrent version system. CVS was RCS in client-server mode, basically. A little more complicated than that, but it's a networked version of RCS. Subversion was, and I quote, CVS done right. Linus Torvalds is famous for saying CVS is the devil, and therefore CVS done right is, and I don't remember the exact quote, but something like the ultimate instantiation of evil. He then wrote Git, which is completely new and different. And it's not just different because, you know, form follows function. He actually deliberately set out to make Git nothing like any revision control system in existence. That was one of his design goals. He succeeded very, very well. It was actually designed to manage the Linux kernel source. And it does it very, very well. Git does some things absolutely amazingly well.
Good article on Git. Thank you. Here, a good introduction to it.
You're right. It was a very good introduction to Git. It finally almost made sense to me.
Until you rebase.
Shut up. There are many others. Many of them are commercial. Many of them are cross-platform. These are some of the ones you may run into. Mercurial is pretty common right now, or pretty popular. Bazaar is fairly popular. BitKeeper used to manage the Linux kernel tree, so it got a lot of exposure, but They changed the license, and it isn't so popular anymore. Visual Source Safe and Rational Clear Case are very popular in the corporate or enterprise world. Fundamentally, all of those still use the same basic concepts that RCS introduced. So, I'm going to explain RCS in more detail. And like I said, this provides the same concepts that you'll find in everything but Git. The repository. Well, it's not really a repository. Most version control systems have a central repository, which is where all your code goes to, not die exactly, but goes to, you know, it's like the bank vault. Everything goes into the repository, and then you selectively take back out what you need. RCS does not have that sophisticated of a concept. RCS just works on one file at a time. Creates what's called a revision group. The revision group is contained in file name, whatever the file name is, comma V for versions, I guess. If there's a subdirectory in the current directory called RCS, it'll put all those comma V files into the RCS subdirectory. Strongly recommend you use that feature if you're using RCS, just to keep the file system clean. Otherwise you'll have, you know, etc.conf, etc.conf, comma V. Well, how many something.confs are there in /etc? A lot.
Therefore.
Yeah. So what's going to look better when you type ls in /etc? Having it all in its own little subdirectory, or splat, right there. The format is actually that it stores the latest version of the file and all of the patches required in reverse order to recreate any previous version. This has been abandoned by more advanced systems. They do it completely differently now. But for the needs of a sysadmin, it's adequate. It will do the job. One of the main reasons it was done like this is so that if you're in a disaster situation, some critical config file has gone missing, you cannot boot the entire system, you're limited to single user mode, you could actually use ed to recover the config file based on the revision group file. That was one of its design goals. Maximum simplicity, maximum recoverability, and of course with everything Unix, the assumption that if you're logged in as root, you know what you're doing. I'll talk about that again in a few minutes when I get to the limitations.
Yeah, what did you mean by all the patches?
Deltas.
You're right. I didn't actually, never occurred to me that I need to cover that. Between any two versions of a file, you should be able to deterministically say that you can get from version A to version B by deleting this line, adding that line, deleting that line, adding that line, changing that line to look like this.
Wikipedia. You ever look at the...
Oh, yeah, changes to the current page.
It'll actually show you
what same
parts
idea.
Have changed. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has a revision control system built into it.
Yeah. That uses the same diff concepts that came about back in 1982 from RCS. So what are... Basically, it's just a set of instructions to the RCS command tools that say to recreate that version, start with this, delete this range of bytes, add these bytes. Delete those bytes, add those bytes. Delete that, add that. In order to reproduce the version that existed at this point in time. So that's called a patch set. Or a change set is the other term that's common now. So to start with RCS, the canonical way is you optionally create an RCS directory if it doesn't exist already. Again, strongly recommend you do that. And the first RCS command you run on a file will automatically initialize everything that needs to be initialized. If you want to do it manually, you run RCS-I space file name. And that will set up the very first version of the file. It won't actually track anything except a description of the file. Main reason you would do that is to avoid having to type in the description the first time you make a change and check it in. That's really only an issue if you're setting up, say, automatic tracking with cron, where you don't want all of a sudden there's an extra prompt in your cron job that your script doesn't know how to handle while your script's just going to crash and burn.
So you could set it up in advance and get rid of that prompt. Basic concept of RCS, think of a coat check desk. Here's my coat. I can wear it if I want. It's fine. I have it right here. If I give it to the coat check attendant, now someone else is responsible for it. I no longer have it. Now, that's not very useful because now I can't use my coat. I have to check it back out to use my coat. Where the analogy kind of breaks down is, now imagine that the coat check girl has... Sorry, that was sexist. Coat check attendant. Has a replicator. And they've made an exact, you know, molecule for molecule copy of my coat. So that if I go and get it dirty, I can go back and get a pristine copy from them. Okay, it's weak. Just go with it. But basically... No, it's not.
It's an abstract concept.
It's an abstract concept. But basically, if the file's checked in, you don't have it. You can't see it. You have to check it back out in order to use it in any way, shape, or form. Once it's checked out, you're responsible for it again. There are subtleties, obviously, that go a lot beyond that. But for just managing, you know, changes to your sendmail.cf file, that's enough to do the job. RCS understands locking, kind of, sort of. Locking in RCS consists of, is the file writable or not? And I believe there's one bit that gets toggled in the comma V file that tells you, should this file be locked or not? It's not locked to prevent modification, it's locked for modification. Locking in the sense of, no one else can change it while I have it locked. For a single-user sysadmin, this kind of seems backwards. You would lock it to prevent changes. No, RCS works on the concept of, I'm locking it to prevent other people from changing it while I'm working on it. So to work on the file, you lock it. When you're done working on it, you want it unlocked. So the rule of thumb is, you normally leave the files checked out, so you have a copy of them, but unlocked so that you can't edit them. When you want to make changes to them, you lock the file. The point of that is to prevent accidental, untracked changes. Why are you bothering to use a version control system if you're going to deliberately subvert it and make changes that aren't tracked in it? If the file's read-only, you're probably going to go, oh yeah, right, I'm tracking this file. When you open it in VI, and VI says, you can't save this file, it's read-only. What are you doing, you idiot?
Yes.
What was that?
After half an hour of programming.
Well, yes, been there, done that. Many times.
Exclamation mark.
To use RCS, and, you know, basically, fundamentally, we're talking about a CYA exercise here. To use RCS and get that basic safety, you only have to know two commands. CI-U and CO-L. Check in, and dash U means, but immediately check back out an unlocked copy. So I'm going to give you my latest changes, and then I want it right back, but unlocked so that nobody can write to the file. The other command is CO-L, which checks out the locked copy that you can edit. So you want to make a change, you check it out, locked, you make your changes, you check it back in, and all in one fell swoop, check back out an unlocked copy. The net effect of these, from your perspective, would be the same as if you just ran chmod plus W or chmod minus W. If you're not going and looking at the RCS files, the only difference you'll see, if you're doing it right, is that now the file's writable, now the file's not. But by using those instead of just a chmod, you're actually keeping track of what you changed. And as I said, that's all you need to know. When disaster happens, there is one more command you want to know, and that's RCS diff. There are some other commands in the RCS suite. I'm not going to go into detail on all of them, because these three should cover 99.9% of the use cases for system administrators. RCS diff shows the difference between any two revisions of the file, between the current state of the file and the last thing you checked in, between the current state of the file and something 6 months ago, between something 6 months ago and something a year ago. Doesn't matter which two. Any two arbitrary versions. So, like I said, if somebody wants to ask you, what changed, what did you change back in February? You pick the revision from February and the revision from March, and you tell RCS, show me the differences between February and March. If you give it no options at all, you just run RCS diff space file name, it'll show you the difference, and it uses the diff command to show you the difference between the current working file against the last version you checked in. Or, as I put it, in other words, what have I changed so far this time? One of the nicest things about RCS, in my opinion, is it has a thing called keyword substitution. You can embed these special tags anywhere in your file, and obviously this only works with text files. Let me rephrase that. Obviously this should only work with text files. And there's a bunch more, but the two that I use on a regular basis are $ID$ and $log$. Every time I check the file out, it automatically fills in a special ID string that tells me what the name of this file is, or at least what RCS thinks the name of this file is, what it thinks the version is, when it thinks I last checked it in, sort of the thumbnail of, you know, critical information about this file, critical metadata about this file, I guess. Log is every time you check it in, it asks you for a description of what you just changed. The log keyword will give you a running log in the file of what's changed for every revision. There are several more keywords that are supported. Some of them are mildly useful. Some of them are whoever needed this and why did they bother programming it. But there's about a dozen of them all told. They're documented in the man page for CO, checkout. Typical uses. I have used this in the past for httpd.conf, and it has saved my bacon several times for httpd.conf when running a public production web server that you still need to do maintenance on, and you still need to turn up new websites on, but you better not break it for more than about 30 seconds at a time. This has, I don't know if I would say it saved my job exactly, but it has certainly prevented massive problems, like when I accidentally delete entire stanzas and don't notice that I've deleted that stanza out of the config file, and save it, and then the phone starts ringing, and oh boy, what did I do? What did I do wrong? Just using RCS, let me immediately run RCS diff against that revision in the last one, and go, oh, I didn't mean to delete that. Paste it back in, problem solved. Slapd.conf for an LDAP server. I'm actually using it for LDAP schema at the moment, which, as it turns out, is something you really, really have to be careful about versioning. I've used it for postfix, because I don't run sendmail. You could equally run this on sendmail.cf or sendmail.mc, whichever way you prefer to deal with sendmail. And as I said earlier, almost anything in /etc is a good candidate for version control. If it's a file that you're editing by hand, it's a good candidate. I also use it regularly for scripts that I'm writing, because when I'm programming, as I said, I'm not an enterprise programmer anymore. That's not what I do for a living. But most system administrators still wind up writing scripts on a fairly regular basis. Some of my scripts get fairly complicated, and I want to be able to tell, oh, when did I break that piece of functionality? Nobody else is coming to me and saying, you're fired if you can't fix this right away. But still, I don't want to redo a month's worth of work trying to figure out how did I solve that problem last time. Oh, and then I deleted that because I thought I'd never need it again. And, oh, shoot, now I need it again. I've got that in a repository. There are some limitations, and these are probably the most important ones that you'll run into from a sysadmin perspective. There's no notion of projects, and I've talked about this before, but let's see. Postfix is actually a fairly good example. Postfix needs main.cf, master.cf, access virtual about 8 or 10 files comprise your postfix configuration. With RCS, you're just tracking 8 completely unrelated individual files. RCS has no idea that these files go together. It doesn't care that these files go together. There's no way to say, there's no way to easily, there are some ways to do it, no way to easily say, give me the entire postfix configuration from August the 3rd. There's ways around it, but by default, RCS will give you this file from August the 3rd, and then you can ask for the next file from August 3rd, and the next file from August 3rd. But if you're missing a file, RCS has no way to automatically give you that file, because it was part of the project. The revision history is deliberately vulnerable to tampering. If you're root, you can change history. Period. And that goes back to the design decision that was made, as I said earlier, to make the revision format as simple as possible, as recoverable as possible, still manipulable, I think that's a word, if you're in single-user mode on an ancient Unix system. So the corollary to that is it doesn't have all sorts of fancy cryptographic checksums to make sure that nobody has altered the file. Because the point is, you're root, you should be able to alter the file if you want to. Poor scalability is the other big limitation. ON with file size, ON with number of revisions, ON with the size of the patch between revisions, and ON squared with the number of active branches and number of revisions in each branch. If you're tracking something the size of a typical config file, these scalability limits are completely irrelevant. Because the slowest system I think I even could find and boot today would still be able to handle any config file with an almost infinite number of change sets, branches, what have yous, and still do the whole operation in under a second. It's not an issue unless you're tracking binary files or unless you're doing something really crazy with RCS. And the last point, and this is important for some people and completely irrelevant for others, it assumes that there's only a single user making changes to any given file at any given time. That's one of the big things that more modern revision control systems add, is the ability for me to be editing a file, Kat's editing the same file, and Gilbert's editing the same file, all simultaneously on our own workstations, and then merge all of our changes seamlessly back together when we're all done. Well, seamlessly is a bit of a myth. That's true. As long as our changes don't overlap in any way, shape, or form, it can be seamless. And then you have to test it, because there might be unexpected dependencies, but still, with RCS, it's not only not seamless, it's not possible. If you're doing that, you just step outside the whole RCS realm, and you're back to looking at a copy of each file in two windows and manually applying the changes. So, for some people, that's an issue. For other people, it's not. Demo. Actually, before I do that, let me point out this rather large caveat. I have to leave relatively early tonight, which is why I've deliberately kept tonight's presentation relatively short. Many of our members are familiar with revision control systems, obviously myself included. If you have questions about CVS, SVN, Git, whatever, post them to the roundtable. We've got a dozen people that I can think of off the top of my head who have used all of these systems to, I don't know if extensively is quite the right word, but enough to answer basic questions. So, I will now attempt to show you how I've been using RCS lately. Give me a moment.
Check in your coat.
Touché.
The only example that I've been working on lately is actually scripting.
Left us in the dark.
Let me make sure I can connect first.
which I can't at the moment because the port I'm running SSH on is blocked by the IBM firewall. Luckily, Lisa's running on port 22. That's a very good thing right now.
Yeah, the recording stopped.
Oh, yeah. I know. Don't worry. Okay. I figured it would happen. That means he's talked for 38 minutes.
About that.
Did it just stop? For,
yeah,
it
was
good.
Oh, well, we got everything except the demo. That's not bad.
So, yes, this is an LDAP server I'm working on right now. As I said, the only example I have at the moment are actually scripts that I've been running or working on. All the scripts that I put under revision control.
Set dark.
Is that readable?
No.
Not so much.
Really? Hang on a second. I have no idea.
That's good.
Better?
Yep.
Well, okay, so the colors aren't wonderful, but hopefully that's still readable.
Better than before.
So this is a shell script. And whether it's shell script, Perl script, whatever, I put this at the top of every file, both to remind myself and to give whoever's following up after me a clue as to why isn't this file writable, and what are all these funny things in it. It's that, I mean, what does that take? An extra, one, two, three, four, maybe 150 bytes, and an extra few lines at the top of my screen, and I never need to read the first line of my script anyway, because I know what it says. So that's just my personal built-in safety check. Obviously, I haven't done very many check-ins of this file, or there'd be a lot more revisions on the log. I do have another file I can show you, but that's what the ID $ID expands to that when I check out. RCS is smart enough to look at any characters on the line before the $ It assumes those are comment characters, and it will replicate them as many times as necessary. So in this case, there was a pound sign. So it was pound, space, dollar, ID, dollar. RCS preserves the pound. On the log line, not only does it preserve the leading pound, it inserts the pound on every subsequent revision, or every subsequent line it adds.
Morning.
Thank you. So, Perl script. This one has a few more revisions that I've checked in. Now, there's a cautionary tale right there. Many, many changes was my description. Okay, so what exactly does many, many changes mean? Well, I don't know, and if I needed to figure that out, I would actually have to use RCS diff and look at the differences between version 1.2 and 1.3 fairly carefully to figure out what many, many changes were. The smaller the change you make at any one time, the easier it is to backtrack and figure out what was going on. So, using this one as an example, RCS diff notes to sql.pl. So that basically, what that did behind the scenes is it checked out the last checked in copy of notes to sql.pl as a temp file, and then just ran diff between the current version and the temp file. And this is the result. So in classic diff format, these are the changes since I last checked in this file. There's a few, and classic diff format is pretty much useless. Unified diff format should produce something a little bit more useful. So if you've ever looked at UDIF format, I can now see that, okay, so basically my changes were renaming. I renamed accounts to notes for whatever reason. And I renamed accounts to... I renamed accounts to notes, I renamed emails to notes, emails, and so on and so... Why can't I scroll? There we go. So, looks like all I did here was rename some variables and tables. If I wanted to go back and see what those many, many changes were, I would run a command like this. Show me the differences between rev 1.2 and 1.3. Since there were many, many changes, we should probably pipe that to a pager. And... yeah, apparently there's many, many changes. I mean, that's not enormous. It's only 200 lines of diff. If this were a, you know, an enterprise software development project, 200 lines of diff would be nothing. For a script that one guy is writing and one guy is running, 200 lines means maybe I should have checked in a little bit more often. Oh, and I have passwords in clear text. That's wonderful. Okay, nobody saw that. Shit. Changing those passwords.
Yeah.
Just as well.
Lucky you.
As far as you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, not so much the between 1.2 and 1.3. Maybe I would need to know this for my own purposes on a script someday. Not so terribly likely. Much more likely is I would break something while I was making the latest set of changes, and I just need to know, what did I change since my last version? I think I have tested this. Actually, I'll show you what happens without the dash U. So I have, here's my file. You'll see it's writable. If I run just CI, check in. Okay, I've now checked it in. RCS tells me that it's going to take notes to sql.pl, and it's going to merge those. It's going to massage all of those latest changes into the /RCS/notes to sql.pl, v file. So I get that detail. That's nice. It tells me what the previous and the new revision numbers are. And then it wants me to enter the log message. The log message can be retrieved either using the rlog command, or if you're using keyword expansion like I am, it now will show up in my source code the next time I check this file out. I did not add the dash U flag to CI here. See something missing? My file's gone. I checked my code in, so to speak. What CI-U does is it checks it in and then immediately checks it back out as though I had done a CO-U. Unlocked. And this time, it's no longer writable. Which is exactly what I expected, which means my demo is, you know, the gods of demo are not frowning on me tonight. So... and that's really all you have to do to use RCS. Create a directory and use one command before you edit the file and use a different command after you edit the file. So three pretty trivial steps gives you that extra safety net for any files that you're changing. That's all there is to it. Now, RCS can do many more things. If you look at the man page, well, even the man page isn't that bad. 276 lines. Ever read the man page for rsync?
Yes.
276 line long man page actually means this is fairly simple software.
Could you show us one of the group files in that RCS directory to show that I have dev sample there?
Sure. If we look in that RCS directory, we have these files. And if we actually look at the file, this is what the start of the file looks like. Just a list of the revisions. It's a pretty simple file format. Description. The description. The version. The log. Text. Well, that's pretty straightforward. And thence a complete copy of... And where do my diff start?
There
we are. So 1.7. Log was force all lowercase and handle empty email names. Okay, whatever. And in diff format, delete starting at line 10 for one line. Add starting at line 10 for one line the following line. Delete starting at line 12 four lines. Delete starting at line 45 two lines. Add starting at line 46 these two lines. So it's not very human readable. That's why RCS diff exists. But this is all of the instructions necessary for the computer to recreate whatever arbitrary version in time. Actually, I should add one of the other limitations to RCS, and again, not a severe one, but if you have a large number of revisions on a large file, and you want to check out, say, the oldest known revision, RCS has to do that recursively. It applies the reverse diffs to get to the previous version, then the one previous to that, then the one previous to that, then the one previous to that. All it has to work its way back in time all the way to wherever you asked for. So, again, on very large files with enormous numbers of revisions, you might actually be able to blink before it was done. Well, I mean, using a modern computer. Thank you. Or binary files is where it gets bad. Although binary files are... Binary files don't have that problem, because binary files aren't stored as diffs. Binary files... And here's a detail that's important if you choose to use RCS on binary files. Assuming RCS has correctly identified it as a binary file, you can force it to manually. That's probably a really good idea, rather than assuming that RCS is going to guess correctly. Anyway, whenever RCS thinks, oh, hey, this is a binary file, it won't store the diffs. It just stores each copy of the file. It's not quite dumb enough to store two identical copies, but it will store every distinct copy. So on a large binary file, even a small number of revisions means you're now taking up n times that much disk space. You know, if you're talking, you know, an RSA key's worth of data, who cares? If you're talking your entire MP3 collection, okay, maybe it's significant. I think Kevin was first.
So normally if you want to put something like this into cron, like do it nightly once a night,
yep.
Would the cron command just sort of check it in and check it out, or vice versa?
Yep.
And that's all? And if there were no changes for weeks in a...
If there's no changes, it's a no-op. It does
so
nothing.
So the file would not get any bigger?
Correct. It would not create a new revision. Now, there's an option to force it to create a new identical revision.
So, I mean, if you wanted, you could make it do it like every 5 minutes.
Yep.
And if changes were like once a month, it wouldn't matter.
Wouldn't matter.
Okay.
It would just pick it up if and when the next change happened.
Okay.
And I have used it in cron to capture, what was it? It was a system where I wasn't the only system administrator. And in fact, we had another company who had people who had root access. And let's just say there was not a situation of absolute trust involved. So yeah, I just tracked a few key files, like, oh, say, etc password and etc shadow in RCS, and set it up to do a nightly check-in through cron. If you're doing so, you would do it like CI dash U so that it always checks back out a copy.
An unlocked one. So that,
so that it's read-only. No, that's read-only. So no one will edit it by default.
Oh.
But if you don't know RCS because that's too old school for you, I had a vendor accuse me of installing third-party software on their FreeBSD-based system because I was using RCS. Let's not go there.
But if you were trying to catch someone...
They would probably just...
You want to leave the file editable for them, don't you?
I could do that, too. I would do CI-L, which leaves a locked copy checked out. Remember, locked is backwards to the way you would normally think of it. So CI-L... dash M nightly snapshot so that it doesn't stop and prompt me for a log message and then the name of the file, and that's all you need. Drop a few of those into a new shell script in etccron.daily. Done. Oh, and don't forget to also create /etc/rcs. But yeah,
also extremely handy for monitoring a slave zone in Bind.
Never thought of that.
Keep a periodic snapshot, you can see how the zone changes over time.
I've actually used RCS to track a master zone in Bind, because typos are easy to make when you're editing zone files by hand. And sometimes those typos can take down your entire company. So the ability to roll back quickly is fairly important. Sorry, there's another question over here.
Are there any plans for BI to have it automatically do the checkout and check-in?
Use an alias, call it done.
That's probably the easiest way. There's nothing automatic that I know of. I know there's a CVS extension for VI, but that's kind of overkill for this type of application I'm talking about.
It could save you from having to automatically or having to remember to check it out.
I guess if you macro open and quit.
Yeah, that would probably be, or write, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would. I could use, well, not in strict BSD VI, but if I was using Vim or the other VI clone.
Vile?
No, not Vile. Whatever.
GVim or password Vim?
Everybody uses Vim now anyway, so it's irrelevant. There was another competitor to Vim once upon a time. Touché, not quite what I meant.
Emacs has its own revision control system.
Actually, Emacs does have RCS integration.
You can't get out.
However, I don't have enough fingers to use Emacs. So, if you're using Vim, you would just set up a macro to override open and a macro to override write, and include a shell escape to check out and check in, respectively. Would probably be, that would be the closest way I could think of to integrating it with VI. But, or as Robert suggested, just map an alias in your shell. Either way. Yeah, other than that, no, there's no formal RCS integration with really any tools that I know of, because the commands are so trivial. Even CVS, where the commands start to get not so trivial, now it's maybe sometimes worthwhile, but I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, as I said, it's easy enough to do it by hand. I was just trying to think of things that...
so you don't forget,
Don't forget, and also help the not-so-tech-savvy in the household.
Well, that's partly why I have that big comment block at the top of every file that I put under version control, to remind myself and to remind others that, why is this file read-only? What's this big comment block? Oh, that's why it's read-only. At least, cross my fingers, that's what I hope happens.
Yeah, for something where you don't have control like that, it's more of a file system snapshotting kind of thing.
Yeah, or if you have reason to believe that somebody might deliberately not be using your version control system. Which is, like I said, that's where you put it in cron to avoid having... I didn't really care if the other admins didn't want to run it, didn't remember to run it, or deliberately wanted to avoid it. I just sort of do an end run around it. And it doesn't matter if you remember or forget.
What happens if your cron job runs while they're in the middle of editing the file?
With most editors, nothing. It'll pick it up the next day. Which, yeah, I mean, how frequently you take a snapshot obviously controls the granularity, or the accuracy, rather, of your snapshot, of the time. How often you tell cron to try and do a snapshot using RCS will directly affect the accuracy of the timestamp of that revision.
At one site that I worked at, they did the reverse of the snapshot. Every night at midnight, they pushed out the last checked-in copy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and remember how I talked earlier about how some sysadmin tasks actually use software configuration management tools. Not Puppet. What was the one?
CF Engine.
Which is a now not as popular system for managing large networks of systems, or complex systems anyway. It has a system that works a lot like that, and it did integrate with version control systems, and it could do exactly what you're talking about. It could check out the correct version of a file and automatically push it to multiple systems. So yeah, that does exist, and that's a fairly common concept to apply. Most people wind up rolling their own anyway. Woo-hoo, we might actually be done before 10. Any other questions tonight? Okay.
That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more MUG meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.